By the last quarter of the 19th century, the promise of unlimited energy, you know, coal and oil, which really hardly had existed before then, coupled with mass production machinery, suggested that an industrial utopia was actually within reach, but only if society could be made susceptible to a degree of management beyond any historical precedent. Personal liberty and conventional morality would have to be surrendered if this promise were to be realized. Indeed, as I told you earlier, even the law of supply and demand would be forced to yield. But how to get rid of the libertarian American past? Put yourself in the position of these visionary industrialists struggling to socialize the majority into dependence on central management. If you need a crude illustration of dependence on central management, it's you raising your hand to go to the toilet. The authority of the political state had to replace the authority of family, tradition, and religion. It was a huge task. There was nowhere else to start but with the children. So, drawing on the method pioneered in Prussia, the quick arrival of young Americans at responsible maturity had to be ended. Financial capital demanded this. Now, this is sort of a tricky point, so I'll try to slow down my pell-mell delivery here. Financial capital demanded this. Why would anyone make huge investments in mass production machinery that was certain to obsolete itself in a couple of years, unless the markets could be guaranteed? Unless this could be done, capital would not be forthcoming, and we would have an entirely different sort of economy than the one we have. That sounds like a titanic task, but assuring markets is an old game. Britain had been doing it for centuries. Competition can be muted a lot of ways, through trust formation, through government regulation, through government subsidies that stack the market deck, and in many ways unknown to the butcher, the baker, or the candlestick maker. But not so easy was convincing our uniquely productive population to give up its traditional yearning for independent livelihoods. The majority had to be retrained to think of itself as employees and as consumers instead of producers. A job is what someone else gives you. Otherwise, the perils of overproduction would frighten away the investment that centralized industrial growth depends upon. And so, mass schooling of a compulsory nature was given its teeth between 1905 and 1915, I believe a little bit earlier than that, in Canada, because Canada was often used as the testing ground for these ideas. We'd see how much resistance, I believe it's Bruce Cooper's The Making of the Educational State, written by a Canadian about the Canadian experience, that will tell you how vigorously Canadians resisted this and how the army was called out frequently to shove it down their throats. I guess that's much different than the usual story you hear, that a grateful populace welcomed these people, like maybe like the Americans marching into Paris after World War II. I don't think that happened. And so mass schooling of a compulsory nature was given its teeth. No longer was it charged with fashioning good people or good citizens. Now it was directed, exactly as it had been in northern Germany, to the inculcation of habits, fears, appetites, and attitudes useful to management. That's all you need to know to understand what standardized testing is. That is all you need to know. It measures nothing else. Keep in mind that this scheme was never intended to be destructive, just the reverse. By converting Americans into specialized economic and social functions, into incompletely human beings, this nation the United States, but Canada also eventually achieved the most reliable domestic market in the world. The human mutilations of schooling are a trade-off for this prosperity. Comfort and security are achieved at the price of personal sovereignty. That's what makes extended childhood a paradox. Give it up, and the society would enter a zone of great turbulence, the resolution of which nobody can predict. Once you see its logic, the mechanisms of forced schooling are fairly simple to avoid. And now, in my strange Pittsburgh manner, I'll get to something positive here, because by knowing and seeing clearly this negative foundation, you can in fact contradict it point by point. Once you see the logic, it's fairly simple to avoid. Well-schooled people are trained to reflexively obey strangers' commands and to continually seek the judgment of strangers. That's how A's are distributed. Later on, after the school game is over, advertising and advocacy journalism, paid for by advertisers, slips easily into the role of school teacher. Well-schooled people have a low threshold of boredom. They need constant novelty to feel alive. With only the flimsiest inner life, they must stay in touch with official voices through television, radio, internet, cell phone, commercial music, and other commercial entertainments, pop journalism, and shallow friendships exchanged on a regular basis.